Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we have a great show. We're going to talk a lot about transfers. We are going to focus on the impact of financial fair play on what's going on. We'll discuss that over a couple of the questions that we received. We're going to talk about Lukaku flirting very hard with Inter for a potential move to Italy. We, of course, have our hot transfer topics followed by the questions from our listeners. We have a very long segment for our patrons only. That community is growing. A lot of questions on transfers on that part as well. And we are going to close the interview. We're going to close the show with two interviews. One is for patrons only with one of our longtime supporters, Sabrina Belmonte, and one available to everyone with our dear friend from Italy, Alessandro Iacobone. Both are going to be focused on Milan. So buckle up. We have a lot to talk to, but let's get started with our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, you and I have been talking a lot about the big changes going on at Inter. Conte starting to really starting to make an impact on the team, on what it will look like next season. It seems that a lot of the problem players on the team could be on the way out with some players coming in. So we know Zico, we've been talking about him going Inter for quite some time. As we mentioned, Lukaku, his recent interview couldn't have made it more clear where he wants to go next. We have Lautaro Martinez, who had a very good first season in Italy. And we had Politano, who I thought was maybe Inter's most consistent player with Brozovic last season. So, Alex, if I tell you that Inter's attack next season is going to be these four players, Zeku, Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, and Politano, how do you rate it? Do you see it even without Icardi as a front line that can, you know, maybe give Juve a pretty hard time this season?
Absolutely. Absolutely to the latter. Could definitely give Juventus some problems and many Serie A teams problems. I really rate that front line. Obviously, you'd go under the assumption that Antonio Conte would have a two-striker system, probably a 3-5-2, hence why you would have four forwards. Tough to call Politano an actual striker, but certainly could be in that mix of a forward in that two. And he could really do a lot of things, he being Antonio Conte, with those four. You got a little bit of everything. You got Lautaro Martinez, who is really a pretty well-rounded, young, exciting striker who's really good with the ball at his feet but can definitely put it in the back of the net. Then you got Edin Dzeko, who obviously is the veteran of that group and just is kind of a striker, just that old-fashioned term of a striker. And Lukaku, we know what we're getting with Lukaku. He is pacey for his size. He can be powerful. He does have that heavy touch, but when he gets going, he can really be sometimes dominating. And with Politano, like I said, not really a true striker, but could do really well playing with a striker. So I would really, really be intrigued to see what those four could do under Antonio Conte. I also just feel like that is kind of Inter to me. I remember the days where it was Samuel Eto'o and Pazzini and Diego Milito, and I always enjoyed seeing two strikers up there for Inter at a time, and I think they'd have the perfect manager for it. So, like I said, I like the idea of having four strikers you can really rotate with, but I also like the mix there. I think you get a great mix there with Dzeko, Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, and Politano, all of them being a little bit different from each other. So it would just be up to Antonio Conte to really figure out what the best matches are, who works best with who. You would assume Lukaku would get a heavy amount of games, and maybe Lautaro Martinez would get the second most amount of games. But then again, Edin Dzeko, despite his older age, is so proven in Serie A. So it would be a great problem for Antonio Conte to have. So that's my opinion of how it would look. But let's go back to Lukaku. You talked about his desire at the top. What are the odds, David, that Lukaku actually goes to Inter?
I would say pretty good. Look, you know, we know Conte's liked him for a while, tried to get him at Chelsea, even at Juve. Lukaku has told this story a few times that he was close to joining Juve, but sensed that things were going to change at the club. And a few days after Conte left, in his interview, he's been giving quite a few interviews recently. And they'd say in the past month, talking a lot about Italy. His brother plays for Lazio. He said how much he likes Italy, that he knows a little bit of Italian, and how it's a league he wants to go to. So, you know, words are important, but actions are even more so. And he's someone that switched from Real and moved to Federico Pastorello as his agent. Pastorello is an agent that's very close to Inter. He has quite a few of his clients there. So even that gets him closer to them. Now, you know, spoiler alert for Man United fans, we definitely don't want to lead you on. I don't see Skriniar under any circumstance being part of a deal for Lukaku. Di Marzio has also talked about how Man United wasn't particularly interested in a swap of Icardi for Lukaku. And I would add to that that I'm really not sure Icardi is going to accept a transfer to any team other than Juve this summer. That situation is going to be really, really interesting. So, you know, maybe Inter can offer Perisic or a player like that, but I don't expect Skriniar or Icardi to be part of that deal. So I think there's a very good chance that Lukaku is going to somehow end at Inter. I think in the next few weeks, we saw yesterday Inter make a move with like two unloaned players going to Belgium for a pretty big transfer fee. You're going to be seeing a lot of these types of deals. I think you're going to see a lot of homegrown players on a lot of clubs, PSG, Milan, Inter, all clubs that have to raise money for financial fair play. Look for homegrown players being sold between now and June 30th. So I think Inter's going to address that first. And once that's out of the way, they could spend significantly on Lukaku because they'll be out of financial fair play altogether. So when I look at that front line, I agree. That's a very nice, it gives a lot of alternatives to Conte. Politano can play as a second striker. He can also play as a winger. He could play in a 3-4-3. I also think Politano has the work rate to work in a 3-5-2 as a winger. Dzeko, I mean, we saw what he did with Bosnia against Italy this week. I mean, another vintage performance for him. I mean, he really is the definition of a Conte-type striker, someone that can open space for the midfielders. So I think, Inter, you should be really excited with what's going on. But, Alex, I wanted to ask you about something else because I know you follow closely the French League. You are really plugged in to the prospects. So Juve has been linked to Ndombele for a while. Their sporting director, Paratici, is sniffing that situation with Lyon. So I want to ask you, in your opinion, how much of a drop-off would there be if Juve goes for Ndombele, say, compared to Pogba? Obviously, the cost would be significantly less, especially on the wages. But I want to ask, in your opinion, like, how big of a drop-off would there be? We know Juve is in win-now mode, so let's say for the next year or two.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I speak very highly of the prospect of Pogba going back to Juventus. I think Pogba back at Juventus, we would see really peak Paul Pogba again. I truly, truly believe that. However, when I just isolate Juventus getting Ndombele, I think it's a brilliant, brilliant acquisition if they were to do it. And I said on this podcast a couple months ago when this rumor first came about that if they got Ndombele, they win another Scudetto. And I stand by that. I think he's a really, really bright young midfielder. He can do a lot. You can really put a lot on his plate for 90 minutes, and he can really impact the game in a variety of ways. Juventus's Juve's weakest spot positionally is the midfield, and I feel like with the midfielders they have now, they arguably, I mean, many teams are arguably missing an Ndombele, but I could definitely make the case that Juventus are really missing someone like an Ndombele to do some dirty work, but also just to be able to be somebody who, depending on the other midfielders you go with that game, you know that they will fit well next to Ndombele because of the amount of things he can do. So the drop-off between Pogba and Ndombele, I mean, I'm not going to lie, Pogba obviously is a more accomplished player right now, and he's a greater player than Ndombele. And like I said, Pogba back to Juve would be phenomenal, I think, for both parties. However, I just said that Juve are going to win the Scudetto if they get Ndombele. So I guess the drop-off then comes only in the Champions League, and I still think Juve would be a much improved team if they got Ndombele. So, David, if we're talking games, if we're talking points, not many. Maybe 3-4 in Serie A tops versus getting Pogba and Ndombele. Pogba maybe with 4 more points added on for Juve in Serie A, and in the Champions League, maybe we're talking one round, but I think there's an awesome unknown to Ndombele. So this was a long-winded way of saying I don't actually think it would be a huge drop-off, David. I think both would be brilliant acquisitions, but I really, really think highly of Ndombele. And listen, I'm not the only one. He obviously is somebody that a lot of teams in Europe would like having. So I think, once again, it would be an awesome acquisition for Juventus. I really, really do. So, David, with all of that said, and I'm speaking about Juventus obviously maybe having a need in the midfield, which midfielders do you actually see Juve signing?
So first off, just a disclaimer, and we got a lot of questions on Sarri today. We're not going to answer them till next week. Like, I 100% still believe Sarri is going to be Juve's manager. I was hoping this would have been announced, at least the Chelsea part, by now. It hasn't. I think it has a lot to do with Chelsea wanting to get everything done with Lampard, even haggling over them being paid money for releasing Sarri, seeing the end of the season. So we're not going to get into that because at this point, I just want to talk about it once it's official. Also for Juve fans, I know, especially with the way Real Madrid has been doing this summer transfer window, it's pretty frustrating. I get the Juve fans that are like, hey, we don't even have our manager, we're going after prospects. Real Madrid, on the other hand, is just the gap's getting a lot better. Like, just take a deep breath. Remember, Allegri came on board in July. His first season, I would say, was the best season at Juve because they won the Scudetto, and that's the closest they got to winning the Champions League. That was the first year when they lost to Barca in a fairly close game in Berlin. So take a deep breath. Juve has made already a very nice move with Ramsey. I know it happened a while ago, and we tend to be prisoners of the moment. I think Juve is going to be just fine. And again, remember, Allegri was appointed even later than Sarri is going to be now. So as far as the midfielder that they get, to me, it's very interesting. To me, it comes down to, you know, how many players are Juve going to sell of their current squad. We saw the negotiation with Man City for Cancelo has stalled a little bit. Pjanic made a comment on him wanting to stay at Juve. Granted, it was an interview in Italy, which sounded very different than the one he gave in France a few weeks ago. Let's see what happens with Dybala. Let's see what happens with Douglas Costa. So I think, you know, if they go for Pogba, the expense is going to be humongous, not just the transfer fee, but also the wages. I mean, I would imagine Ndombele would come in at about a third of the wages of Pogba, and that's really significant. Wages count really just as much as transfer fees on the books. So let's see on the sales. I also think it depends how much is Juve going to want to spend on the defender, because we know they need one as well. But maybe Sarri really goes all in on Rugani and says, you know what, I'll take my chances with Demiral, who had a very good half season at Sassuolo, develop Rugani further and go with Chiellini and Bonucci as his starter. So let's see what happens there. I think if Juve wants to spend a lot on a defender, then maybe Ndombele makes more sense. But everyone at Juve, take a deep breath. I think the club's going to be just fine. I think the club's already planning everything with Sarri. But we're going to talk a lot more about that, but only after it's official, because at this point, I think we're all pretty exhausted by this saga.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I would certainly say so. I would like this to all be over with. From a Chelsea perspective, I am so sick and tired of having things drag on and drag on. And I'd like Chelsea to appoint their manager with actually at least half the summer to go. Okay, that'd be great. All right. Well, David, we've talked a lot about Juventus, of course. But another top Serie A team who it feels like we have not talked nearly as much about, because we haven't, is Napoli. But there's always some things going on, at least in the rumor mill. So let's move on to some hot transfer topics before we get to our Twitter questions. Regarding Napoli, what is the latest on James Rodriguez and Irving Lozano to Napoli?
Yeah, two big names associated to Napoli, especially Rodriguez, would be a very expensive addition, wages-wise, of course, also transfer fee. Lozano, you know, I think is around the 40, 45 million a year, a player to buy transfer fee. His wages would be lower. I still think for either of these players, the odds increase significantly if Napoli sell a big name, either Insigne or Allan. I think especially if Insigne goes, you could see them investing significantly in either Lozano or Rodriguez. The thing with Rodriguez that I would caution Napoli fans is Real Madrid already had him on loan, I think, for 2 years. I don't know if they would loan him again. I could see them really wanting to cash in, especially now that they've been spending so much this summer. So let's see what happens there. I could see Rodrigo, who is another Spanish player that they've been linked to. He could come in regardless of a big sale. Lozano, I'm a little more 50-50. Maybe they can pull it off without it. But we've seen historically Napoli, if they spend a lot on a single player, like Fabian Ruiz came in after they sold Jorginho, I think it would have to come with a sale. So, you know, by now you guys know how I think. Until the status quo changes, I go on the assumption that things are going to remain the same.
Okay. David, could Buffon return to Serie A now that he's gone from PSG?
I don't think so. I've had a lot of people ask me about the Parma thing. I think that's just a Twitter thing, a sentimental thing. Yeah, it'd be a great ending for that. But I think Buffon's going to keep playing abroad. I think he's going to do one more year. We've read his goal is to play in the Olympics with the Italian national team and retire after that. I could see him going to Porto. There's been a lot of buzz on him going to replace Casillas, which in a way would be pretty poetic. It would seem like the type of thing Buffon would do. But as much as the Parma story would be intriguing, I simply don't see it happen. I think, you know, Buffon's still going to want a pretty high salary, and I'm not sure if Parma would be willing to do that. But I think it goes beyond that. I just don't think Buffon has much appetite to play for a Serie A team other than Juve at this point.
All right, fair enough. David, would you say that Juventus has an advantage over Real Madrid in the race for Paul Pogba?
I think you could say so in the sense that Real Madrid have already spent a ton this summer, and man, are they off to an impressive start. I've said it many times, even Barca getting Griezmann and De Jong. I think a lot of clubs are going to look at the season that just ended as really the opportunity to win the Champions League. It's going to get a lot harder moving forward. So there's all the expenses that Real Madrid have had. And I'll say, to me, the ace up Juve's sleeve is their relationship with Raiola. I mean, they are incredibly close with him. I know he's technically under a ban. That's really not going to be a problem. He's still going to be able to do a lot of business for his clients. Off the top of my head, I can't remember a time that Real Madrid went for one of his players. I could be wrong, but we know Juve is very, very close to him. So yeah, I would say as it stands today, Juve does have an advantage, but let's see, maybe Real Madrid starts selling some other players and they can get back in the mix for Pogba as well.
Okay. How about this? What do you make, and this is a huge story, what do you make of Paris Saint-Germain jumping ahead in the race for Matthijs de Ligt?
It looks like we're in the summer of Mino Raiola again. I know we're going to mention him a lot today. You know, it looked, Barcelona looked like the favorites to sign him for a while. There was a not that long ago that I would have been very surprised that he gone anywhere else. Doesn't seem like Barca wants to pay him a huge commission on top of huge wages for De Ligt. Leonardo, Milan's former director, is now heading to PSG. They've done business together. De Ligt has said that, you know, he wants to play regularly. Maybe PSG offers that more than Barcelona. I know there's a lot of people that are outraged by this move. I kind of see PSG as kind of separate from Ligue 1. They are kind of their own entity, so I'm not that you know, upset by his decision. If he ends up going there at this point, I would say it's more likely than not. And I think Raiola is going to make a really nice commission, and PSG is going to get a player that they can keep for a very long time.
Yeah, I know De Ligt is getting a lot of stick out there for even considering PSG with the other teams mentioned. It is interesting. I would just say that the way De Ligt can really win in all of this is if he can catapult PSG to what they've been wanting for so long, and that's a Champions League title, then all of a sudden De Ligt looks like an absolute god. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. All right, David, how about this? What can Krunic bring to Milan?
Yep. So interestingly, yesterday, right as I was recording with our friend Alessandro Iagobone, I saw Di Marzio had tweeted about this. So I didn't want to ask Ale about it. It came out of the blue. Like, there wasn't much buzz about it. So when you hear my interview with Ale, there's a reason we don't discuss it. And look, you know, I try to be very upfront with our listeners. I think these are the types of signings we're going to have to get used to for Milan for the time being. I think this year, these are the types of deals they're going to make. I know Di Marzio talked about them getting veterans, not just young players, but I don't think it's going to be like names like Ndombele or things like that. Realistically, you know, don't blame the current ownership. You should blame Mirabelli for that ridiculous spending spree from a few years ago that's going to really set Milan back. So Krunic, I think, is a, you know, good addition. They're getting him for good value. I think he played one season with Gianpaolo. I'm pretty sure they were both at Empoli at the same time. In any event, he's played in a system very similar to what Gianpaolo is going to institute at Milan. Has Serie A experience. Recently, our friend Enrico Passarella wrote an article on our Patreon page where he was talking about the Empoli players. So I'll read verbatim what he wrote because I really trust his judgment. So he writes, Rade Krunic is a much more established player and he can become their second banana after they sold Mia Zajic to Fenerbahce in January, displaying his cutting and shooting ability. 5 goals is a big haul, and few teams could use an offensive-minded box-to-box player. I think, you know, when you look at Milan, they are losing a lot of midfielders off the payroll that barely played at all. And Montolivo and Bertolacci never played. So, look, they definitely need to bring in more midfielders. Is he going to have a huge role? I would say he's going to have a pretty decent role. I'm not sure if he'll be a permanent starter, but I certainly expect him to play, to get at least 15 to 20 starts in Serie A, something along those lines. So again, you know, I hope Milan proves me wrong, but unfortunately for Milan fans, I think the reality is these are, you're going to have to look at a lot of these types of signings for the time being.
All right, David, we're definitely going to look at a team we have not talked about in a while. How come Genoa are the favorites to land Bennacer?
Yeah, so I know there was a lot of Milan fans when they saw Krunic. They're like, well, why aren't we the team that gets Bennacer, who, you know, what I've seen of Empoli, I would agree, is a better player and has more upside. So there was a lot of surprise that Genoa is reported to be in the lead for Bennacer for 12 million. A lot of people are really surprised that, look, you know, sometimes the transfer market, things can be a little bit deceiving. They might not be what they seem. I have a feeling there's a team working with Genoa on this transaction, a bigger club who will then eventually buy Bennacer for a higher fee and park him there for a year. Empoli were relegated, so he's not going to go down to Serie B. I remember when we were covering the Piontek story, I think it was Fiorentina director Corvino had mentioned that, look, you know, clubs, smaller clubs tend to not sell players for huge fees. You kind of have to build it up. Like, Milan's going to be able to, if they decide to down the road, to sell Piontek for a lot more than Genoa did. So I think this is kind of like a gradual thing. So, you know, you just really look at it. And I've been covering transfers for a long time. I kind of try to, you know, maybe not take things at face value so much. And I think this is one of those deals that falls under that category.
Mm. Okay, well, it's time. We got a lot of Twitter questions, as we always do, but especially during the transfer window. So let's jump right in. David, first question says, I often hear you talk about plusvalenza. What does that actually mean? Is it the same as a profit?
Cool. So let's talk a little bit more about financial fair play and the financial aspect of transfer. So Plus Valenza is not a profit. One of my pet peeves is people who really focus on net spend, on what clubs spend. That's really not how it works. Like a player sale is very different depending on how much amortized value they have left. So let me give you, I like to give this example, like Ronaldo. This is just completely hypothetical. Juve bought Ronaldo for $100 million. Signed a 4-year contract. So every year, like $25 million a year, his value goes down on the books for Juve. So let's say Juve sold Ronaldo tomorrow for $75 million. That is a net spend plus 75. That would be zero. That would be $75 million left on the books, and they sold them for 75. So that's zero. Let's say Juve has a homegrown player on the team and they sell him for $20 million. That's actually plus 20. That's a $20 million profit because you really didn't spend anything to acquire that player. So Plus Valenza is more like a capital gain. It's what you receive on top of what's left of the value of the player. So this is a really, really important distinction. You're going to see a lot of clubs between now and June 30 of selling homegrown players to make these Plus Valenza, because that's what's counted for FFP. That's what's counted on the club's books. Net spend is just something people use on Twitter to flex. It ultimately means very little to nothing. The sale of a player, if a player sold for $40 million and another player sold for $40 million, it could have a very different impact on the books of the club, depending on how long they had him and how long they acquired him. So long and short of it, that's what a Plus Valenza is.
All right. I'm sure that cleared it up for many, as we always get new listeners, and you've explained it before, but we've had a lot of new listeners since then. So good stuff
and
there.
God bless them all.
Amen. Amen. All right, David, next one. Which Inter players do you see struggling in Antonio Conte's system?
So not so much in the formation, I think, in the what Conte wants to bring to Inter, no drama, the group being much more important than the individuals, and any individual who tries to be bigger than the group is going to be ostracized. So I think you're going to see there's a lot of reports that Conte wants to clean house, wants to get rid of Icardi, even Nainggolan, a player that he's wanted when he was at Juve, Perisic. Basically anyone that's like been a distraction in recent years, he wants to get rid of. So I think those are the players that are going to struggle, because quite frankly, when I look at this, I mean, Icardi isn't a Conte type striker, but the rest of the team, it already is kind of a good squad for Conte. We know that they're going to have the new BBC with Godin, Skriniar, and De Vrij, Brozovic, I think, and somewhat played the Pirlo role. Barella is going to be coming in. Almost certainly he can play the Vidal role. So I think formation wise it fits, but I think character wise, Conte really wants to get out of the Pazza Inter thing, and let's see if he can do it.
Yeah, that was a good question, because we often focus on who's going to benefit with Conte, but there's always two sides to the story. So David, what does Inter need to do to topple Juventus?
Well, I think in the short term, I think Inter's doing a lot of things really right, like getting Godin, Conte, especially. I mean, Conte is a huge difference maker to me. You know, he represents at least 10 extra points just for walking in the door, even though Spalletti was an above average manager. I think Conte by himself is 10 points there. It's going to take a little while, but Inter, as we've said, they're well on their way, and they're almost done with financial fair play after June 30th. They're totally done with that. But in the short term, I think they need an assist from Juve. They need Juve to maybe fall a little bit apart to win the Scudetto this season. But I definitely think the gap is getting closer. You also look at Juve, Ronaldo and Chiellini aren't getting any younger. So I think Inter maybe is one season away from being right there to compete with them. In the short term, though, they would need Juve to take a step back on their own.
Okay, next one. Who between Chiesa, Bernardeschi, and Lorenzo Insigne has the most talent, and who will have the best career when it's all said and done?
Yeah, so Insigne is obviously the older of the three. Bernardeschi, I think, is 3-4 years younger than Insigne, and Chiesa is very young. I think Chiesa is 6 or 7 years younger than Insigne. Man, Insigne's had a resurgence with Italy. He's looked great, and we'll get into it in a second. So I still think he's the most talented of the lot. I do like Bernardeschi. He impressed me the season that just ended. I'm not the biggest Chiesa guy. Obviously, I respect the fact that he's quite talented, but I'm taking Insigne, and I'm going to go that I still think out of these three, he's the one that's going to have the best career. He's been around a long time, but he's just in really in his prime now. So Insigne has at least three great seasons left in him. So I'm going to go Insigne.
Yeah, I think so often we look at the dips Lorenzo Insigne has, but he really has had a really nice career. And I know it's funny and it's a little bit superficial, but I wonder how good of a player he would be if he was like 5'7 and not 5'4. I mean, he's got so much in his bag, and sometimes lack of height works for you, but 5'4 is like really, really short. So that would be interesting. All right, David, next question. The listener wants to know, what am I not seeing in DeCiglio? Allegri seemed to pick him in big games, and Mancini is selecting him on the Azzurri.
So this is from our friend John Lamorte. Shout out to him. Look, I'll say the one thing about DeCiglio is we are in an era where wingbacks are known much more for their offensive game than defense. And I think Insigne is kind of like one of the exceptions there. I would say Calabria on Milan's kind of similar in that sense. Allegri's had a close relationship with DeCiglio, dating at their time at Milan. We know Allegri tends to be pretty defensive. Right back in general is a very weak position. We've talked about it, not just on Italy. The other thing is, you know, DeCiglio does have a very influential agent. Like, how much of an impact does that have in starts and games played? Probably not much, but, you know, he does a very good job of keeping his profile pretty high. So I think that's part of it. But I think it has more to do with the fact that he's one of the rare wingbacks who I would say, at least defensively, I would say he's above average. Offensively, not. But again, there's not many of them that can defend.
Okay. David, why does Bonucci keep starting over Romagnoli on the Italian national team?
Yeah, I mean, on the Azzurri, seniority always reigns supreme. I also think the fact that Chiellini is so comfortable playing next to Bonucci makes it easier. Like, I clearly think Romagnoli is a better defender today than Bonucci. I don't think the ball distribution, especially in Italy when you have Verratti and Jorginho in the midfield, matters that much. So I would start Romagnoli over him, but I think this comes down to seniority and his chemistry with Chiellini.
Yeah, chemistry can definitely be a tiebreaker for sure. Next question, what is your level of optimism regarding the Azzurri?
Very high. And look, I have to say, you know, for a long time, even this time last year, I was saying there's really no talent on the Azzurri. I kind of stand behind it because we've had a lot of emerging players since. I mean, we've had, you know, Keen, Zaniolo. I know they aren't regulars now, but Chiesa, to Mancini's credit, he's played a lot of youth that we really didn't see before. But one of the main reasons why I'm very optimistic, and we've talked a lot about it, is the best, what you would think, at least talent-wise, are amongst the best player, the Italian players, have started delivering for the Italian national team. Insigne and Verratti are, I would say, as good as players as there is on the squad right now, and they've usually been dreadful on the Azzurri. So kudos to Mancini for getting them going. That really can't be understated enough. So I've really come around and much more optimistic with them for sure.
Yeah, they look bright. They definitely look bright. And it's good for football, and it's good for football that the England team now is starting to look a lot more bright. So good future, hopefully, in international football. All right, David, let's move away from football for this question. Is it true that the writers of The Sopranos confirm that Tony died in the final scene?
Yeah, so I haven't read the book. This is by Alan Sepinwall, who's one of the best TV critics, covered The Sopranos incredibly well. I know in his book, he really gets into that, and I have to read it. And I don't know if I would spoil it because I'd want, you know, I want him to get paid for what he said. But that's certainly what it seems like. I mean, I've always felt that in the last scene, that's what happens. And to me, there's plenty of evidence that that's what it is. Also the quotes by David Chase. So I'm going to read the book this summer and, you know, give you a little bit more insight. But I always felt that was the case. So it really doesn't surprise me that that's the theory being floated out.
All right, David, this is very topical. You were there last night. So what was the Wu-Tang concert like?
got to say, really, really good. Surprisingly much better than expected. And first, I'll give you a little background. Like, I'm definitely a rocker at heart. You know, I like hip hop. I'm not huge in hip hop. I definitely don't like the recent hip hop. But hey, you know, I'm a 42-year-old guy. It's not meant for me. But I absolutely love the Wu-Tang. I would say they have been as big a part as the soundtrack to my life as, say, Radiohead, Guns N' Roses, bands like that, that I'm like a super fan of. Like, I consider the RZA to be as influential an artist on my life as there's been. I think the first wave of solo albums by the Wu-Tang and the 36 Chambers are just incredible albums. I always like to say 36 Chambers to me is like definitely maybe an Appetite for Destruction. Like, that's like a greatest hits album disguised as a debut album. But I have to say, seeing them live was really quite the experience. And I saw them last night. It was really excellent. I had seen them 15 years ago, and it was without a doubt the worst concert I had ever been to. Back then, the only saving grace was like a 10-minute part with Method Man. And last night, Method Man wasn't there, and it still was really outstanding. Showed up on time. You could tell they were really into it. They were really appreciative of the crowd. And Boston last night was the Bruins game 7. So a lot of people were really into that, but it was still an excellent crowd. They looked really good. They sounded really good. They had Old Dirty Bastard's son, who was really like really similar to his dad. That really worked. I could have seen that really being a disaster. I have to say, the stole the show was Inspector Deck. I thought he was by far the best. Really, really impressive. So I really enjoyed it. I could tell they were really into it. So it was a great experience. If they come around your neck of the woods on this tour, I would absolutely recommend it. So I'm very excited to be joined by one of my favorite guests on the show, not just because he's incredibly well-informed on the team that he covers, but he's really a true gentleman. I've really enjoyed getting to know him and chatting with him before we record. So we're going to talk about Milan. And I was telling Alessandro before we started recording that I don't think there's really anyone better right now to chat about Milan, because he's a Milanista doc, as we would say in Italy, and he's incredibly informed on the team. I always read his tweets to keep up to date. So I'm glad to welcome my dear friend, Alessandro Iagobone. You guys know I'm on Twitter as @nonevoluto. And he also has his tweets in English, which we'll get to in a second. So Ale, welcome back to Calcioland. Always a real pleasure to have you.
Ciao, David. Ciao to everyone. Like, it's a pleasure. Thanks for your nice work. It's not Valentine, so it's too sweet for me, like, to receive your words, like, about me, like, but I'm proud of it because I know you so well, and I respect you and your podcast and your followers, so it's an honor for me to be part of it. Thank you very much for your invitation again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about Milan, and let's start talking about the directors, coach, and then eventually we'll move to the players. So as you know, we're recording this on Wednesday early afternoon in Boston, the evening in Italy. You'll hear this on Thursday. I don't think a lot will change, but I just always like to say when we record. So Ale, let's start with the sporting director. It feels like Milan, they're trying to get the club's management structure in place. There was a few directors who were linked to Milan, which you've covered well. There was Tare, who ended up staying at Lazio. Everything points to Frederic Massara being the guy. So tell me if you think it's going to be Massara. And more importantly, what are the attributes that you think it's important for Milan's next sporting director to have?
Well, as the Milan fan knows, like, the situation regarding the managing of AC Milan, especially for the sporting director role, is like it's been like a kind of soap opera, and could be like a series on Netflix broadcast, because like we follow like for weeks like different voices regarding Tare and Sartori and Osti, that is like the sporting director of Sampdoria at the moment, and they are all great names. I followed all the words that and the rumors that that I got on myself like times ago, and they were like all the tweets that AC Milan follow and Maldini follow, that they are real, and because Tare is one of the best. He was considered by me one of the best since a couple of years, for the way that he works, for the contact that he has, and for the way that he's also like as a person, because this kind of role is like made of relationship and trust from people. So the way that he refused the AC Milan proposal, it's another confirmation that he could be like the right person. The right person, because he didn't leave like Lotito and Lazio, because he's thankful like to him for because the people that doesn't know his history, like he became like a director because of Lotito choice. So he has like to thank Lotito a lot. And for this reason, it sounds like he didn't accept the great proposal that the AC Milan gave. The same thing is for Sartori, and even I knew that Osti did the same. Probably it's half of the truth, because I think, and thinking about, I consider that this refuse is like even being because of Maldini position and Maldini role inside of AC Milan management. Everything is focused on Maldini. So it's very hard to ask to one important director to move and stay in the back of another man, or another manager, even if it's Maldini name. So that's why probably in the truth, like even Sartori and Osti and Tare didn't accept this kind of role. Things that is not happened with Massara, because he had this kind of a position behind Sabatini for several years. So probably he's ready to work under the blanket and under the desk, and without being as a front office, as the front man for the dealing, but looking for the real prospect as a players, and give the names list to the most important director. In that case was Sabatini, in this case is Maldini. But coming back to the question that you did to me, like the director has to work hard, has to start since the beginning to follow the steps and create relationship, going to the small fields around Italy and Europe, not in the great stadium to look for players. So starting to bet on relationships and players before that they blow as a top player. I mean, buying the light, for example, when is 2 million euros cost, not like 40. That's the thing. So it's the kind of role that you cannot like just change the Facebook of the Twitter like a profile and say, okay, I'm a sporting director right now and whatever, just because you were a good player or you were like I don't know what, you know what I mean. So he needs like to be on the field and follow thousands of players in order to understand and select the best one and to arrive before the others. Otherwise, it's too easy.
Yeah, too absolutely. 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 So now let's talk about the manager position. I mean, it looks pretty much certain that Marco Giampaolo is going to come to Milan. You have been tweeting for a while that Milan had a strict budget on what they could pay the manager. Well done on your part. But I think despite the budget restriction, Giampaolo is a very good hire. He's kind of like a Sarri disciple. In my opinion, he's the best Milan manager that they've had since Allegri. So I want to ask your opinion on Giampaolo and what do you think he can bring to the club?
Well, as you know, you know me already. I always like try to inform myself when there is a new name, something around like the AC Milan word. And but you know, I didn't want to ask to Milan tweeters like what's the impression about of the ideas about Gianpaolo. But I wanted to ask to people that work with and studied with. I got a great surprise. I mean, at the school in Coverciano, he was the first on the class, and the second was Sarri. And so, technically, in theory, like technically, it's even better than Sarri to teach how to play football to his team, you know. And since we have to restart with a young project made of young people that needs to be helped, like to give the best. For example, I don't know. I take one example of one player that we know for the good and the bad side of his like way to play. Kessié is the kind of young player that has a great potential.
Yeah.
But he's like the power is nothing without control. You remember the Pirelli spot like with Ronaldo? It was the same. I mean, he's powerful, but sometimes too much. He needs like to be helped to drive his skill, the good skill, and be put it like for the club and not for himself. So don't run too much and sometimes without a reason, but do less movements but studied on the paper, and that is what the coach has to do. Say to people what to do on the field in order that you can move as the chess, you know, you move the players, but they, even if you do turnover and you switch it, they know what to do. They know if they pass the ball on the left without C, there is someone that is able to reach it and to take it. And that's what Milan needs, because lately we put like the passion, we put the power that Gattuso gave to the players, but sometimes they were like going randomly. And unfortunately, in this kind of soccer, if you have no Ronaldo, if you have no Kroos, if you have no like Modric, you cannot do that. You have to study. You have to study and repeat the same like words that on the paper and repeat it on the field. And this is, for me, Gianpaolo is the best choice ever to do this and to teach to young people to work and to play in the right way for AC Milan.
Absolutely. And Gianpaolo's developed a lot of very good players at Sampdoria, and I think it makes a lot of sense. He's got a clear offensive philosophy too. So let's talk about a player who could be potentially coming in. And this is a Sassuolo midfielder, Stefano Sensi, who I think is quite a good player. So tell me, what's your impression of him? And is he the type of player that you think we're going to see Milan linked to in the summer? So someone who has experience, but whose best years are ahead of him.
Well, like everyone asked me about Sensi, even here, like I spoke with someone that knows him since he was very, very young. He's still young, but I mean, when I was like in the schools of the teams, and he was like approaching to the professionalism, and they told me that he has very, 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 very nice feet. What we need in AC Milan, because what we miss lately is the quality. The thing is that when you ask me if Sensi is good for Milan or not, I can tell you totally yes, considering that we have to look for at least three, even four midfielder, because if you consider the departure of Jose Mauri, Montolivo, Bertolacci, Bakayoko, and the thing is that Biglia doesn't give like the confidence to be like ready and, you know, ready for all the season, because he's 33 years old, because he had like several problems in all the entire career. And last year it's been like kind of complicated. So And we cannot even count on Bonaventura for the first 3-4 months, because he can't come back to be able to train. But as you know, after 1 year without play, you need even another year like to get ready, you know, and the chance to have like instrument like for a muscle and contraction because of the training again after 1 year stop, like is another thing that nobody talks about, but we have to consider. So we need several like players in the midfield, and safety is suitable for our project. If you ask me if I consider Sensi as like in the first 11 players on the team, I say no, that's not to be like our top player. No, yeah. He has to be in the group of the 20, okay, but not consider like instead of Bakayoko or whatever could be like in the head of the of Maldini and the Giampaolo as general team, like I mean the main team, the 11 that should be on the field every week. No, so but the answer probably could be given from the market that we will have. I'm scared about the 1,800,000 euros that they give to him. Doesn't sound like an amount for someone that has to be sit on the bench. Sounds more as a titular like player. So I'm a bit afraid about it, but I don't want to judge before. I want to wait for probably Elliot and the management surprise me again, taking like someone bigger, because we need important players, because we cannot like float in the middle of the highlights like forever. It's like time to start, restart, because this one is the third restart. We want to trust that, but technically I want to step by step, I want to grow up. And in this case, we need more players and more important names for that.
Yep. So let's speak about some potential other targets. There's been talk about Liverpool defender Lovren, and I saw, as you pointed out, Massara was interested in him in the past. Those are some other, you know, I know there are other names too. So tell our listeners, and I know there's a lot of Milan fans who rightfully really trust your information and your knowledge, any other players that you see Milan targeting soon?
But I noticed that, first of all, I mean, there is no point to take a Liverpool player 30 years old and with a cost that could be expensive, because anyway, he was coming from Liverpool, and especially the English players, they don't fit immediately well, like in the Italian like championship. So there is no point to give another contract to Zapata and take Lovren. I don't have anything against Lovren. He is a good player still, but there is no sense, like there is no point to do that. Zapata had a great season. Anyway, you give like 2 years as he asked, or you find a deal because he wanted to stay. You don't kick him out. You don't put him out of the door and after looking for another 3 years old. There is no point. And so I don't trust that much to that idea. And as I told you, it's just I knew that it's just on the list of what Massara was following, but doesn't mean anything, because when the sporting director followed like a thousand of players, so it's not that the point. About the other names, what I like and what I know that the AC Milan eyes are on are the players of Sampdoria. That I was liking even before that I knew that that Giampaolo was coming or whatever. When I saw Sampdoria in San Siro playing well against Milan, I noticed Anderson, because yeah. it's very clean. It's like a kind of Romagnoli, like a very clean, working like clean on the in the defender line. And the price. The price has like quality. Price is quality, physically strong, but has a good fit. Could be like in the middle of one Bakayoko and one player with good feed. So it could be the good, but anyway, he's expensive as well, because I know that he has like several highs on from Liverpool, from other like English team, and unfortunately Premier League, when they put money on the table, they always win. So I hope that they're going to follow Gianpaolo, trusting in Gianpaolo way to teach like soccer. I know that they are very close to him, and he gave to AC Milan the list with his favorite players, and the list match, because AC Milan was already giving a look to them. So we are crossing the fingers and we'll see. There are two players that I really like.
Agreed, agreed. So now let's look at the other side of the ledger. So we know that Milan, right or not, have to deal with financial fair play. So, you know, in the reports that I've read, Maldini and they know, even Boban knows, that there's going to be probably at least one significant player who's going to leave in the summer to make a big plusvalenza. In your opinion, who do you think that player will be? And do you personally have a preference if you have to make a sacrifice on who that player would be?
Okay, thanks for your question, because I want to make it clear about it. Because sometimes fair play financiario is something that it's harder to understand first. It's harder to understand when you don't want to understand it. I mean, it's like when you take you find on your car the payment for because you park in the wrong way and you don't want to see it, and you put in the folder of the car. But anyway, you have to pay it once.
Yeah.
The is the same. So we have before the end of June to cover and to follow the steps that Fair Play Financiario is giving to all the teams. So we need to reduce our debt. So we need to do plusvalenza. And you can do plusvalenza not selling Laxalt or Castillejo that you paid
yeah.
us. You can do a great plusvalenza selling players that you bought for 2 years. I mean, Donnarumma, Suso, and Cutrone, Calabria. And if you get a lot of money from Premier League, could be Romagnoli. But in these five names that I gave you, my hope is that the sacrifice is Suso, because I love mm-hmm. Donnarumma. It's not easy to find one 20 years old guy. I would say man, but he's not a man. He's a guy that he's like one of your top player. And unfortunately, we say that the grass of the neighborhood is always greener. We check like all the goalkeepers of the entire world, but we have Donnarumma. Let's do the review of the season. He saved a lot. He saved a lot, many goals. So if we had the chance to get to the Champions League, it's been also especially because of him. So for me, I defended him when everyone was like against him because of Raiola. I'm defending him from the selling twice right now. I like Cutrone, and I consider strong more than the people think, because probably he's not called Cutronovic or Cutrino, and that doesn't sound so cool, but he's a player that I love. Of course, I don't sell Romagnoli at all forever, like, because he's our captain. So what I hope is that Suso could be. But Suso is more like a mediatic like name, because nobody is asking about Suso that much. And there is a reason. Probably he's not that much strong as we thought in this year. I mean, when you have an eye, you can see better than someone that is blind. You know,
yeah.
But doesn't mean that you are like an eagle. So the thing is that probably we consider Suso more than what the market considers. I hope that someone from Premiership comes to give us like 40 millions in order to cover mostly of the fair play financiario before the end of June. I'm afraid that the solution could be Cutrone off. Cutrone, because Andre Silva is coming back. Andre Silva is not easy to place. If Mendes doesn't place him somewhere else, with Gianpaolo could have like another chance. So you sell Cutrone, you keep Andre Silva, and you cover the fair play financiario as well. I hope, even if I'm Andre Silva's fan and friend, I hope that Cutrone keep to be in the AC Milan. I hope. But anyway, the logic pushed me to think and consider that Cutrone could be sacrificed if no one else is coming to ask Suso.
Interesting. So, Ale, let's close on this because, you know, for me, it's rare to see someone who loves their team as much as you know me, as you love Milan, who's also very competent covering the team. So I want to ask you, what makes you optimistic about Milan right now? Because you cover a lot the news, you're very plugged in with what's going on, but I know that above all else, you love Milan. So what makes you optimistic right now? Let's give some reason for hope to all the Milanisti listening to you.
But, like, considering our director, like our, like the managing of AC Milan, one icon like Paolo Maldini, another smart man that is Boban. Boban is probably the people doesn't know Boban, not as a player, I mean as a manager. Infantino from FIFA pushed him a lot to stay in FIFA's management because he's very cool, he's very smart. He's even tough when he has to talk about things that he doesn't like. It's something that breaks the rules, you know? It's like could be the right person to break some like way to manage AC Milan that I fought against in my last years and that didn't help Milan because the newspaper, like the journalists are talking about how much we spent in the last seasons without win anything and without have a great base of players, right? I read like 4,000 millions and blah, blah, blah. All the times that we spent money, we had to pay twice because of the friends of the friends of the friends of the friends of the friends. Okay? With Boban, with Maldini, doesn't work like this. So this is a good way to don't waste money, to focus the money on the right direction, to focus the money, to find players, to save money, to collect money and play and buy good players, but anyway, to don't waste it for sure. And this is the first reason why I want to be optimistic. Boban is too smart to leave a FIFA and come to Milan just to be like a Muppet. No, it's not like this. So I really appreciate that Boban got married with Maldini in this adventure. But like the most important thing is that still, if are like 12 years that we are not winning a cup, even still, if there are like 8 years that we are not winning the championship, I still see young kids wearing a AC Milan t-shirt with Gattuso, with Kaká, with Capu, with whatever, Van Basten, whatever. But they are still wearing the AC Milan t-shirt. And it's not that easy. It's not that easy to be a kid and to go to school when you don't win. It's easier like to get married with a winning like team as a Juventus and say, oh, I'm the best, I'm the Juventus fan. But the thing that I can see, and still I can see people from all over the world invest of the kids, the daughter, the son, like transferring, like the Milanismo, this is make me happy and make me like have a wish to see these kids happy once in their life. And I hope that this is coming before I die, because I want to see other cups. I saw already 5 Champions League with my eyes, taking the hair, like, but I want to see other, at least another couple. So that's the most important thing, why Milanista has to be positive. Milanista is the only one thing that can push us everywhere with the passion of our colors that is incredible.
Absolutely. So, Ale, you know, it's great to have you on an English language podcast, because more and more people get to hear your love for Milan and their competence. But I saw that now you're also tweeting your transfer news in English, like you do it first in Italian and then in English. So tell our listeners a little bit about that and what they can expect from your account this summer.
Well, you know how much I care about Milanisti abroad, like far, very far. I consider them like even better than the Milanisti that lives beside the stadium, because it's easy to do like a couple of kilometers and miles to get to the San Siro when you are living in Milan or close to. When you do, like, when you sacrifice, like, waking up at 2 o'clock in the night to watch a game against Frosinone, it's because you have a strong passion. So I have, my respect is total for the people that doesn't speak Italian, doesn't live in Italy, and blah, blah, blah. So I ask, because as you can listen from our podcast, my English is okay, but sometimes what we are talking about is too much important to be like confused. So I ask help to one of the followers that I have, Amin, that is living in UK and since 10 years, and he has like very fluent English and correct English. And even if it drives crazy, like to translate my tweets, because sometimes I want to say something, but I cannot stay like straight. So I use like strategical ways to give input. So he has to translate all of this, and it's getting crazy. But we decided to do this because to give respect to all the listeners and the followers from around the world. Like, there are many, many, many English people that are following me, and I think that they deserve to understand everything in the right way immediately, and not like reported like 24 hours later or whatever. Because on the internet, the news and the way to be like informed from Milanisti is like that wrong. That they deserve like to be informed on time. That's the reason why I decided to translate in English.
Ale, I'm so glad you did it, because again, you have really great information. So everyone follow Ale at Non Evoluto, and I look forward to chatting again with you later this summer, because you really are a great Milan insider. So thanks again for joining us on Calcioland.
Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone. Forza Milan always. Have a great rest of the week. And let's keep in touch. I'm going to keep following you and follow your podcast, because I love it.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the Calcioland hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great, because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the Calcioland podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.